Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. And it's really nice to be here in beautiful Madison. I was excited about coming to see the beautiful countryside here. So it's good to be here and talking about recovery and the gifts of the program. My sobriety date is September 12th, 1987. And so I got sober when I was 20. So I never legally drank, which kind of floors people, but I'll tell you about myself, and then you'll understand why. So I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people, and I stay involved. I stay in the middle of the program. I have a home group. My home group is a Sunday meeting right outside my neighborhood, St. David's. It's a speaker's meeting at 4 o'clock on Sunday, and we rotate the service positions there. You know, I was the cake lady for a couple years. That was kind of fun. Service makes you show up. It makes you feel a part of the group. It plugs you in, gets you outside of yourself. And, you know, if it wasn't for service work, meetings wouldn't be here. And so I try to remember that. I have a sponsor. I sometimes check in with her more often than other times. I try to see her once a week, at least talk to her once or twice a week. We get together about every 2 weeks. We have a group that we go to every week. I think that's real helpful for staying sober, is definitely having a sponsor. There were years where I didn't have a sponsor. I don't recommend it. When I was 17, I was introduced to this program, and I wasn't happy about it, as you can imagine. I don't think too many people are happy about coming through the doors here. It's usually the last stop. So I grew up in an alcoholic family, you know, Irish, the Irish virus, I guess, as they call it. And as a child, they're all family functions and everything centered around alcohol. There were a lot of fun times, and we came from a very big family. My dad was one of 11. Both sets of grandparents on both sides were alcoholics, and there were a lot of good times. I did also see a lot of bad times, and my grandmother died of cirrhosis when I was 5. My other grandmother died alone in an apartment. Somebody didn't find her for about a week. And my grandfather had a stroke from drinking, fell off a bar stool. And, you know, on and on and on, like a lot of you all know. Many of us come from, you know, a real strong background of addiction. And I realize that there's people in here that maybe don't have that background. And what I'm sharing today is just my experience. Keep coming around, because there's plenty of people in here that you will hear your story, and you will find some familiar ground. So I started drinking at a really young age, probably earlier than most kids would start experimenting with alcohol. As a child, I drank my dad's beers. You know, they kind of, you know, thought it was cute or funny, and I would, you know, get beers for him. It wasn't uncommon back then for him to drive around with a case of beer in the back seat. So my exposure to alcohol was pretty young, and there was a lot of chaos in my house, a lot of chaos, waking up in the middle of the night, crazy fights, just total insanity, following my dad around to bars with my mom. So anyways, their marriage fell apart. My dad was dying from alcoholism. And by the time I was in elementary school, I had started drinking somewhat regularly. And I mean, I'm not going to say it was my parents' fault, but, you know, the alcohol was around. And my brother hated alcohol, hated what it represented, what it did to our family. And I was a different character, you know. I felt like it was a mystery why there was so much attention and so much focus and so much happening around alcohol in my family, and tried it at a young age. And the first time I tried it, I was with a friend of mine. We were in fifth grade, and we stole some little travel-sized liquor bottles from her parents' bar, and we drank them. And I remember kind of getting warm and fuzzy and thought, you know, kind of tastes crappy, but, you know, it does make your stomach warm and makes your face hot and that sort of thing. And probably about a year or two later, I drank with my dad. We were coming back from a weekend together at a lake house up in Gettysburg. And I remember always having a lot of anxiety about his drinking. So as the sun would start going down, I'm like, oh, we got to drive home. He's been drinking all day. And I remember starting to drink his drinks. So he put his drink down, and I would drink it. And one time in particular, I got really drunk. And we were driving home, and I started saying, I got to get sick. And so he pulled the car over in Gettysburg. And, you know, at this point, it was a one-lane road, so it was very scary. And pulled over, and I got sick. Got back in the car, and he said, well, that'll teach you to do that. So we got home, I had the bed spins, and on. So that's kind of like how things started for me as a child. And, of course, my father lived with a bunch of drinkers and druggers. So, you know, I spent a lot of weekends just being exposed to a lot of crazy stuff, alcohol, drugs, you know, sex, pornography, just because I was a kid living in an adult environment. And I felt like I was an adult trapped in a kid's body. You know, I spent a lot of time taking care of other people, to include my younger sister. And so by the time I was drinking, and I remember distinctly in sixth grade inviting my little friends over, and some of them asked about alcohol, and I said, well, I know about alcohol. What do you want to know? And so I was kind of the culprit at a young age. And so that's kind of where it begun, and it became pretty regular in the seventh grade. And throughout middle school into high school, I started experiencing very severe blackouts, very high tolerance for alcohol, meaning I could drink enormous amounts of alcohol, still walk, talk, function, but not remember anything. And I had a lot of falls and a lot of cuts and a lot of bruises and trying to piece things together. And whenever I drank, I couldn't predict what was going to happen or even how much I was going to drink. And it became a mental obsession at a pretty young age. And I didn't really care for much more. I didn't care what the consequences were. I think for me it was, I liked the feeling. I liked the temporary relief of whatever kind of discontent or anxiety that I felt as a child. And I can't say it was all bad. I mean, I did have some good times. But as I got older, the powerlessness became a lot more apparent, even to those around me. And the scary thing is then I got a driver's license. And my grades were always bad. I could never focus in school. I found myself lying about what I was doing. I always had good intentions, but sometimes I didn't make it back home. Might have passed out somewhere. And it just became chaos. My life was chaotic. Ran away from home a lot. I was living with my mom. I basically got through high school. I don't know how, but I got through high school. And as soon as I was getting ready to graduate, one of my friends who I ran around with every day, and I was able, back in the 80s, I was able to buy alcohol myself. Sometimes I could, you know, just ask somebody older to get it for me. But you know, I would go to Chris's Steakhouse, you know, ring the little bell, and I could buy, you know, 12-pack or whatever. And I think I was pretty regular there, so I guess they just assumed that I was old enough. And so by the end of high school, my friend was killed in a car accident, and luckily had not picked me up that night. And reality set in that, you know, this is somebody I ran around with every day. We did a lot of crazy stuff together. And, he was gone. And I think it kind of woke me up a little bit. But I didn't stop drinking. My dad got sober when I was about 15. And he was in and out of my life. For the most part, he really made a pretty good effort to always, be there on the weekends and that sort of thing. But I was really worried he was going to die. He was yellow. He had developed cirrhosis of the liver. He drank in the morning when he drove me to school. He was always drinking a screwdriver. I would take a sip to confirm what I thought was true. And it went on like that. Well, one day he did get sober through AA, and I was floored. I didn't have formal religion. I was Catholic as a child, but when my parents split up, that kind of fell apart. But I prayed. I prayed because I knew my dad was dying. And one day he did come into AA, and he did get sober. And so as a teenager, he started taking me to open meetings. He said, I'd like you to be part of this thing, and support me and understand what I'm doing. And, of course, he knew I was well on my way. And I could relate to a lot of what I heard. I thought it was good for old people. Like when you get older and you have nothing else to do, you go to AA. So that was kind of my, and I was very grateful for AA for what it had provided for my dad, which was sobriety. So the end of high school, I was really struggling, and the day I graduated, we had gone out to dinner with a few families, and everybody was eating dinner, and there was a craft of wine on the table. And I just kept grabbing it and pouring myself a glass of wine. The adults were drinking the wine plus me. I think the kids were eating dinner. And I kept drinking, and I didn't eat my food or anything. And by the end of the day, because I had been drinking all day and then all night, we got home. And my dad, I don't remember a lot of it, but he looked at me and he said, "You're really drunk." And apparently I had some pretty awful things to say to him. And I grabbed my money. I always had a lot of money. I worked a lot of jobs, took my money, was going to get my car that I had paid for, so you're not going to tell me what to do. And he pulled me out of the car, had it hit me to get me out of the car, and I took off with my cash and, was gone for the night, didn't come home, which, he had no idea where I was. So the next day when I came home, I came in the house, and I'll never forget, he was playing the piano, and he had cleaned out my car, and the whole kitchen was lined with bottles and that sort of thing. They were my bottles from my car, and he wasn't really saying anything to me. And I really felt guilty because I knew alcoholism had nearly killed him, and then here I was, didn't have a lot of respect for, him in terms of I was doing the thing that nearly killed him. So he said to me, "Let me know when you're ready to talk." I went upstairs and just tried to sleep it off. So that night I said to him in tears, I said, and there had been a lot of incidents like this. This wasn't the first time. I said, "I'm not going to tell you I'm not going to drink anymore because I know I will. And I want to stop, but I don't know how to." And he said, "Okay, well, will you let me help you?" And I said, "Okay." So the next day he took me in to see the employee assistance program through his employer. And they did an intervention. And I was fairly honest. I'm sure I withheld some information, but I was fairly honest about my experience and that sort of thing. And so they had me sit out, wait, and they met with my dad. And I came back in, and they said, "Are you willing to, let us help you and do what we recommend?" And I said, "Sure. Yeah, okay." I was in a lot of pain. And they say, you got to strike when it's hot with alcoholics, right? So I was feeling very remorseful. I was in a lot of pain. I had a lot of depression. And so they said, "We want you to go to an inpatient treatment center." So I sat back in my chair and I said, whoa, you know, I know it's a little bit of a problem, but don't you all think you're overreacting a little bit? And they said, no, we're not at all. This is very serious. It's progressive. What we see going on is very serious. And I said, okay, well, can I have some time to think about it? They said, no. And fortunately, they had checked around. This was back in the mid-'80s when treatment centers were hot. You know, you could use your insurance and you could go into a treatment center for 30 days. Not the case these days, but they couldn't get me a bed, so I had to wait a little while. And so I said, okay, well, I would like to go away with my friends to Beach Week. And they were like, I don't know if that's such a good idea. But anyways, I manipulated my way. I went away for a week. I came back. I was ready to go to treatment. I was ready to go. Came back, went to a treatment center in Baltimore, checked in. I was 17 years old. Everybody in there was, I think the next youngest person was 25. And they dropped me off, and I remember sitting in the intake office, and the sign on the wall, I always remember it, it said, misery's optional. And I was miserable. The fun was really over. There weren't as many fun times. It was kind of frightening. It was chaotic, and it was making me sick. And so I went into the treatment center. My roommate was a 60-year-old rich woman who was an alcoholic and a cocaine addict. And I compared out. So I was there. I called my dad after a couple of days, and I said, you made a big mistake. You got to come get me. He said, you're right where you need to be, and hung up the phone. And I was really, really mad. But I was in Baltimore. It wasn't easy to get home. And so I made the best of it. I was pretty resentful. My friends were going to college, and I was going to rehab. That's not quite what I had in mind for my summer after graduating from high school. However, you know, I stayed there for the 30 days. I did push the limits a little bit in the treatment center, playing, you know, the kid game and trying to manipulate my way through, made it through the program, came back home. And for the next 2 years, I was in and out of AA. Mostly in, which was the good news. I did go through another treatment center less than a year later, went through a halfway house for a couple months. I was living with my dad, who was in the program, so we went to meetings every day. Went to a clubhouse-type meeting where there were meetings at 7 a.m., 12, 6 o'clock, 8:30. I mean, I was really blessed. There were a lot of meetings where I lived, and not a lot of young people, but there were some. And, you know, every day I took a couple college courses, and then I'd go to my meeting, then I'd go to work. But I struggled. I really did. I didn't go every day. I was still kind of half-stepping it, comparing out, okay, the people in the rooms, they're a lot older than me. They've been arrested. You know, I just focused on all the things that hadn't happened yet and was miserable. I'd come late. I'd leave early. I didn't have a sponsor, so they call that half measures, and I was doing half measures for a good 2 years. I had a person that was living with my dad and I. One day he killed himself in the house with us. He was in the program. The three of us were in the program, and kind of used that as my excuse. You know, AA doesn't work, this or that, or it's too, what did I think? It was too intense. You know, it's like this recovery thing's too intense. I would find any excuse to not compare in. Went to college. After I had 90 days sober, my dad said, I don't think college is quite a good idea yet. No, I'm going to do college. I want to be like other kids. I want to go to college. Went to college, lived with a couple girls I grew up with, and went to meetings. And they kind of knew that I didn't drink and that I'd been through rehab. And within probably a couple weeks, I was drinking. You know, they had parties every day. People were smoking every day, drinking. Got a job at a bar. And I went downhill pretty fast. So you guys kept telling me it's a progressive disease and it gets worse. and everything that I would hear in the rooms, I could see going on in my life. And I would justify it. You know, I would try different things to lie to myself. And basically, this semester that I was at school, I broke my foot. I lodged a beer bottle under my thumb and under my nail. So I had a big piece of glass under there. So, you know, I woke up. I was the type of person that when I was drinking, I'd kind of go off on my own and disappear, and people wouldn't know where I was. You know, I'd wake up in a cow pasture in the middle of winter, you know, because I decided to walk home from work by myself from a bar. Just really crazy, insane behavior. And so I left school, nothing to show for it other than a broken foot and, you know, stitches on my finger from where I had a broken beer bottle. And came home with my tail between my legs. You know, my dad told me I wasn't ready. Came home, a couple other bad things happened, and kept coming into AA. I come in, I go back out, and I did that for about 2 years. And, you know, there was nothing really profound that happened September 12th, 1987. It was just, you know, the continued pattern of drinking, blacking out, you know, depression, and just feeling like I wasn't, I couldn't compare in with my friends who were drinking and being, you know, college kids, and I couldn't compare in with people in AA. And I just felt like I was at a jumping off point. You know, either I'm going to totally commit to what I've heard in the rooms, or I'm just going to keep going down. And I got on my knees one day and prayed, because I had heard people say that in the rooms, that they prayed. And I didn't know what I was praying to. People told me, you know, if you're not sure about the whole higher power thing that they talk about in the steps, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him, they said, use the group. Use AA as a collective whole that has the power to help people stay sober. And so I could relate to that. I thought, okay, there's something powerful going on in here, because there are people that lived on under the bridge, you know, that are staying sober, that are productive members of society. So I started to kind of compare in instead of comparing out. You know, I thought, wow, maybe there is something in here. People were laughing, having a good time. There were people in recovery that had, you know, rock bands and things to do, softball, stuff like that. You know, I was 20 years old. I was really concerned. Like, hey, am I really destined to just go to AA meetings and go to Bob's Big Boys and eat pie and drink coffee? I mean, God, is that what the rest of my life's going to be like? You guys said, just keep coming back. And I could see in the rooms, like, there were people that were having fun, you know, people that were doing stuff. And all I was doing was drinking. I wasn't going out doing a bunch of, you know, cool stuff, you know. Matter of fact, I'd wake up the next day and I'd feel like crap, and I couldn't be far from the bathroom, and I'd be, you know, throwing up. So I really wasn't doing anything. So I don't know what I thought I was going to miss, because I really wasn't missing anything. So I came in. It was after Labor Day weekend. I had been drinking a lot that weekend. I was dating a guy. I had put some of my friends' lives in danger because they were in a car with me. And, you know, I fell off a bar stool and ran into a guy I was dating. And he said, I heard, you know, this, that, and the other about you last night. And I was like, I don't know. I don't remember it. And he just looked at me and goes, well, how can I trust you if you just, you know, this is the way you live? And I said, I don't know. I don't trust myself, you know. And that's how important alcohol was in my life. And he just shook his head, at, you know, with disgust at me, you know. And then the next day, there were another party all day Saturday. And I remember just floating on a raft around the pool. And I just remember him walking by and just shaking his head, looking at me because I was drinking again. And, you know, that's just kind of the way it went. And it just dug, you know, it reinforced all the bad feelings I had about myself anyways. You know, it just confirmed, you know, just the bad feelings I had about myself. So after Labor Day weekend, I think I just hit a real down point in terms of the depression. And I just kind of said, God, you know, if you're there, I need your help because something bad's going to happen. You know, I'm either going to end it, or, you know, I'm gonna change. You're gonna help me change. And so the 2 years that I came around AA, I got something from you guys because there was some hope there that I got because I could see it working in your life. And so I got on my knees that day, and you know, I was taking some medication that I probably didn't need to be taking. So I don't make that weekend as my recovery time. My sponsor said, make it your birthday, you know. So about a week out, I bumped it out because I knew I was totally sober on my 20th birthday. And I made that my sobriety date. And she said, look, I picked up a lot of one-day chips. So I said, I don't know if I need to pick up a one-day chip. Picked up another one. And I put it on my dresser. And she said, maybe just focus on today. You know, don't worry about what you're going to do when you get married one day or when you, I mean, just stay focused on today. What are you going to do for your recovery today? And I didn't understand the sponsor thing. They said, instead of drinking, call your sponsor. And I was like, then she's going to talk me out of drinking. Like, why would I call her if I want to drink? I didn't quite get that. So they said, well, in order to prepare for that, start calling her now so you get to know her, you know, and build in somewhat of a relationship so she gets to know you. And I said, oh, okay, all right. And maybe not go to the bars for a little while, you know. And I thought, okay, all right. Because I did. I tried to, like, you know, be a kid and a college student and put myself in these situations that were miserable. So people said, hang out with some people. You know, there was a really good blues band, so I started hanging out with people in the program. And started going to meetings every day. I said, okay, so I did the half measures, you know, went to one or two meetings a week. That didn't work too well. I mean, they had me on Anabuse and all sorts of stuff. Anabuse is like a drug that you get really sick on if you drink. So some doctors prescribe that as impulse control. So, you know, I'd done that. So they said, you know, go to a meeting every day and just keep it real simple. You don't have to, because I thought, all these steps, oh, my God. Like, I might as well be a nun. You know, you want me to focus on God and not drink and try to be a good person. And I don't know that I really need all that. Maybe just not drink. Can I just maybe, if I just do the first step, will you guys let me stay? That's kind of the way I thought about it. And you said, yeah, I mean, you know, the only desire is a requirement to stop drinking. And I said, okay, good. I have a desire today. And so I came in and, you know, I just kind of listened and just shut up and listened. And so people said, you know, we need some help at this meeting. Do you think you could help us? Like maybe give some chips out? And I was like, okay, that's a big commitment there. I don't know. I was a little scared about that. So I said, all right, God, that means they're going to want me to come every week. And I was really, you know, I wasn't sure about that. But anyways, I said, I'll give it a try. And I showed up, and I was a chip person. So that happened. And I got 30 days. You know, I picked up a 30-day chip. And then 60 days. And I could never get past 60 days. And 90 days went on. And I just couldn't believe it. You know, I couldn't believe it. Then I really liked the meetings. And I stopped being so focused on myself all the time that I got to know your names. And I got to know who you were, and some of you guys were funny, and, you know, your funny stories, and Disease Charlie, and all these different people that I got to know, these characters, and, you know, I became a part of without me even knowing it, you know. When I saw somebody else go back out or die or something bad happened, it hurt me, you know, because, like, I cared about that person. And about 6 or 9 months into it, I had, like, this profound feeling of gratitude. I mean, I was really happy that I was sober. And I cried. It like hit me that this really works. You know, and I'm sure you all can relate to that. You sit in a meeting, you're like, oh my God. You know, I've been taking it just what's in front of me and doing what you guys told me to do. Like, I'm not unique. I'm not different. You know, whether you drank a fifth of vodka every day or you drank five beers a day, whatever your story was, you know, alcohol had caused me a lot of unmanageability. And I was totally, my life was out of control. And the insanity for me was just being caught in this vicious cycle, you know. And people said, if you keep doing what you do, you're going to keep getting what you get. And I was like, okay, so maybe try something different. What did you do? What didn't you do last time? Well, I didn't get a sponsor, and I didn't go to a meeting every day. And they said, okay, well, why don't you just focus on that for now, you know? Nobody has to come in here and do these things perfectly. So I did that, got a sponsor, and started working the steps. And basically, I celebrated a year of sobriety on my 21st birthday. So, I mean, I stood up there and I cried like a baby, you know? I thought, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm actually happy that I'm sober. And, you know, I'd saved some cash and, you know, for a kid, I went and bought a nice sports car. And, you know, I just was able to take charge of my life. You know, it's it was just amazing. I was able to start going to school at night, start working on my degree. I started having friends that were all different ages. You know, some of my childhood friends, I became friends again with them. But they understood. They said, we had no idea, and we're sorry that we weren't supportive. We didn't realize kind of what was going on in your life. And the true friends stuck by me. And I had a friend that I had lived with in college. She came to my anniversary, my first anniversary. And from there, I got a job working in an addiction treatment center. One of the ones that I went through. And I was able to be around people and have that reminder and just kind of be in the middle of it, which was good, you know. And so I worked in addiction treatment for about 7 years and went to college at night. And from there, I just, you know, stayed involved in the program. And there were some points when I got complacent, you know, when I moved out to Colorado for a while, and, you know, sometimes it's hard to get plugged back in, but I wasn't quite as involved, and, you know, I could see where it's so easy for people to go back out, you know, and I managed to somehow, I got plugged back in, and that's happened throughout my life, you know, my growing up in AA, but, you know, I finished my degree, I got out of the addiction treatment field. It didn't pay a lot. And I got into computers. That's when the internet and everything was taken off. And so I developed a career in that. And, you know, things have gotten pretty good. And the big thing about recovery is that, you know, by not drinking, there's just a whole new world. You know, the realm of possibility, learning from people in the program. You know, I got a career today that, you know, I'm not saying this to brag, I just know that this would not happen in my life if I wasn't sober. But I was a kid that didn't get good grades. I didn't bring books home. I didn't have anybody ask for my report card. I couldn't focus in class. And you know, it was hard going to school, even when I got into recovery, because I had a hard time sitting down reading the big book and reading books because my mind was always racing. But I did go through college, and I got a job, and now I work in cybersecurity, and I work in, you know, Department of Defense, and, you know, have one of the highest security clearance you can get. I mean, all those are just as a result of being in the program. I mean, I certainly wouldn't have these things in my life. And then more importantly, the people in my life today. You know, I try to work the steps and stay plugged in, and I do that by sponsoring people. I feel like I can't tell somebody to do something I'm not doing. So if I say to somebody, all right, let's work the steps, I mean, if I haven't worked the steps or I have an issue going on in my life and I know I need to work that step, I need to get with my sponsor And that's one of the key things about sponsoring people and doing service work. It just keeps us in the middle. I've been through a lot of tough things in recovery. Marriage breaking up. But I have two beautiful, wonderful kids. One of them's here with me today. She's never heard me speak, so it's a little emotional. I talk to her openly about alcohol and drugs, and I know that, you know, my kids have their own journey that they have to live. But they've certainly been around recovery. Probably at least half the people that I'm around are in recovery. And you all have just helped me grow up and learn some things that I didn't learn growing up, you know, that things like when you say you're going to do something, do it. You need to give back. Stay humble. Don't let the gifts of the program take you out. That's a really big one. For me, when things are hard or something bad happens in my life, I know how to, like, hunker down and you guys are there for me. But it's like a lot of the good things that happen in life that I need to be careful of. I've had important jobs that have taken me on travel and different things, and I've been in a lot of situations with a lot of heavy drinkers. And for me today, I have to stay involved in AA because I need to remember who I am. I have a respect for alcohol. There's nothing wrong with alcohol. My husband will have a beer. You know, I have friends that drink. It's not for me. I choose not to drink. And I know that I can drink. And do I ever think about drinking? You know, sometimes I'll look at these drinks that are out there and they didn't have them 30 years ago. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. But, you know, then I say to myself, well, then what? You know, then what? I mean, one drink, then what? I mean, I was sitting at Virginia Tech yesterday. I'm sitting there and, you know, taking it all in. The kids are all, you know, having a great time. Some of them are, you know, three sheets to the wind. Saw a girl fall down and I know, you know, there but for the grace of God. I mean, I know what alcohol is for me. And I don't want to go back to that. You know, I want to breathe and take it all in, you know, and live life and not feel like I need to be high, you know, to escape. And, I can enjoy and live in the moment, you know, and experience all the good things, you know, the gifts of recovery, which is, you know, being a part of something, whether it's my recovery group, my family. You know, I can learn how to be a good sister. This disease has been taking people down around me. You know, my younger sister, who I took care of growing up, she's like my kid. It's almost killed her this past year. And it has been extremely painful, and you all know when we try to help family members what that's like. It's a very, very difficult, painful thing. But my friends in recovery, my program that I work with you guys has gotten me through it, you know, and made me be able to be there for people, you know, family. And just because I get sober doesn't mean that everything's going to be great, that bad things don't happen. But pretty much anything I can think of, you know, when I first came in to recovery, I had those deal breakers. You know, if this happens, man, I'll drink. Or that happens, I'll drink. Today, right now, I can honestly say that I don't have any deal breakers. You know, you all have helped me stay honest and connected, at least today, that I know that that's life, you know? To love somebody, to be loved, you know? The flip side of that is pain, you know, loss and pain. And, you know, I'd rather take the risks and love and, you know, show up and be a part of life than be numb, you know, and just kind of be out of it and be numb. And I think about those things. So whenever I do romanticize about, you know, the alcohol, because I'm an alcoholic, I know. that I will not have all the other stuff that I have. I wake up in the morning. If I want to go for a run, I can go for a run. I don't feel like crap. Sometimes I do, but most of the time I don't. And I can try new things. You know, my big thing, what am I going to do now that I'm sober? I don't have time. I mean, my feet hit the ground at 5:30 in the morning, and I'm going till midnight, you know. That's a problem for me sometimes, keeping the balance. And I really try to, I work with my sponsor a lot on that, about, you know, they talk about the triangle of recovery, physical, spiritual, mental, that triangle that we try to maintain. You know, it's not about just not drinking today. It's about being reasonably happy. It's about, you know, having the gratitude every day. It's about helping another alcoholic. It's about a spiritual journey, working these steps. They look intimidating, but they have them in order for a reason. And my experience has been that, you know, I'm never going to graduate from this program. And if I don't drink, I don't ever have to go back to square one. I might get off kilter here and there. But pretty much for every problem I've had in my life, you guys have had feedback for me or referred me to somebody, you know, that could say, hey, I know somebody that has experience in that particular area, help you go down that road and stay sober. So these steps are in order for a reason. And I do try to start my day by conscious contact with my higher power. It doesn't happen every day, but most days I really try to do that. I try to ask myself, what am I doing to stay sober today? Whether it's go to a meeting. I go to at least a few meetings a week. I keep in touch with my sponsor. I try to maintain that conscious contact. So every day I try to do at least a couple of those things, you know. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I wrote down some things, you know, because I get a little scattered, but I think I covered a lot of the things I wanted to share with you. But and what we try to do up here is share, you know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. And my life is, if you told me 32 years ago, you know, that my life would be like it is today, I would have said, you're crazy. First of all, I'd never be working with computers. My family laughs about that. Computers, you know? I worked in the treatment field, and that's when computers came out, too. And I remember we got one, and we were like, what's this? You know, turning it on. And, you know, so it's just funny. I guess the point I'm trying to make is you just don't know. I mean, there's so many possibilities just by not drinking and being open and willing. And for me, I got to stay humble. You know, I need to go to meetings. I need to remember that I'm not that bad, but I'm not that good, you know. And a lot of the things that you guys have taught me, I need to come here to be reminded of them. If I don't come here, then I won't remember how bad it was or how good it can be. And I guess that's all I really wanted to say. If you're new to AA and you're not certain as to whether or not this is for you, I will say that this is ironically, this was kind of my last stop, like a lot of us, you know. And thank God I made it in here. I've had a lot of people in recovery that have not have gone back out and not come back. Just keep an open mind. It's, you know, it's one of the most successful ways to stay sober, and that's the thing that I tell people. It's not the only way to stay sober, but there's millions of people that have gotten sober in here. And, you know, I just, one day at a time, you know, just don't drink, go to meetings, and just try to work these steps. And it's nice to be here today, and I appreciate you guys inviting me to speak.
Thank you.